Politicians and others are quick to remind us that children are the future, but clearly the kind of future we'll have tomorrow depends on how we educate them today, in our families, churches, and of course schools. I believe many of you are here today because you care deeply about the future of our communities and country, the strength of our families, churches, workplaces, and schools. You believe in the American experiment of ordered liberty and free enterprise, and the importance of civil discourse, freedom of speech and religion, civic duty and neighborliness, and you understand, as our founding fathers did, that only a wise and virtuous people can remain free for long. For without virtue, people have need of too many masters. Thus, you believe in the importance of education and its task of breathing the soul of a civilization into the next generation. But maybe you wonder how to best accomplish that in a society struggling with collective cultural amnesia. While we certainly don't have a magic bullet to fix everything overnight, I do believe the kind of education Cambridge is providing gives us reason to be hopeful about the future, in spite of the uniquely challenging times we live in. But first, some cultural context. We are living in a VUCA world, as they say in the military, a world marked by volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity, and that's in every industry, not just the military. And while every generation feels like coming of age is difficult, we really are at a critical juncture unlike any other in history since the Industrial Revolution. You're living in the midst of a digital revolution, a time of unprecedented economic and moral disruption, with a scale and speed of change that warrants the new term liquid modernity. That is to say, change so fast that the latest change hasn't had time to solidify before a new change is already on the horizon. Just when our children will need more wisdom, more virtue, more discernment, more grit, resilience, and fire in their belly than ever before to navigate the radical and rapid changes affecting every area of their lives, they seem less and less equipped to handle what's coming their way. We see this in our country's dismal performance on international academic tests, in spite of quintupling our educational spending over the past 30 years. California state scores were released in October, and in spite of all the billions spent, not even 50% of students met or exceeded standards for English, and less than 40% met or exceeded standards for math. Clearly, our cram-pass-forget system of education is not working when we have to remediate one-third of college freshmen in reading, writing, or math, or worse yet, college graduates on the job. And academics aside, we see it in our young people's physical and emotional health, epidemic levels of childhood obesity, and the most medicated, anxious, and depressed generation of young people in history, in spite of living in an era of unprecedented comfort and ease. In fact, this generation of kids will have a shorter lifespan than their parents for the first time in over a century. We see it in the increasing number of so-called fragile flowers and snowflake children, with their need for trigger warnings and safe spaces, whose helicopter or snowplow parents are always on call, ready to save them from their own irresponsibility and failures, as well as from others' microaggressions against them. We see it in the campus rage and outrage that continue to make headlines across the country, and I do believe we can only expect the polarization, the rancor, and this cultural convulsions to continue because so few have learned how to listen charitably to others, to think and analyze carefully, and to engage graciously with each other without demonizing, dehumanizing, and vilifying those who disagree with you. Nowadays, it seems that if you disagree with someone, you're not just wrong, you're actually evil. And that's a dangerous place to be as a country. Maybe you're concerned about our young people's addiction to technologies that chain them to little glowing rectangles for an average of 9 hours per day. They are amusing themselves to death and becoming people who live life alone together instead of in real relationship or community with one another. Technology is a double-edged sword, both incredible boon and bane, but what is clear is that the more powerful the technology, the more wisdom and virtue are needed to handle it well. Handled thoughtlessly, it often cultivates in people an easy everywhere mentality, where they think everything should be as quick and easy as ordering on Amazon, when in fact none of the best things in life are, be it education, careers, marriage, or parenting. This attitude often unwittingly promotes a passive and consumeristic response to education, to work, faith, relationships, sex, and social causes, which has been detrimental to our social fabric. And all of this is manifesting itself in a generation of teens and young adults stuck in Neverland, who never quite grow up and have an artificial maturity, meaning they take on adult vices earlier and earlier, but assume adult virtues and responsibilities later and later, if ever. In fact, there's a whole new category of books on how to raise adults as young people transition from being adults to hashtag adulting as if they're just playing adults. Apparently, Neil Postman was right in saying that it is not what we hate that will ruin us, but rather what we have come to love instead. All this is just to say what you know already from just watching the daily news. It's increasingly difficult to find children turn young adults who are well-informed, but more importantly, well-formed. Well-formed intellectually and spiritually. Young people who know how to think, not just what to think. How to make a good life, and not just a good living. And people who are flourishing and thriving intellectually, physically, emotionally, relationally, and spiritually, even in our complex cultural context. So what are we as a society to do? With so much at stake, how do we raise and educate this generation of children to become the next generation of adults that we need to lead and serve their workplaces, communities, the church, their country, and their families well? The shortage is real and only seems to be getting worse. Our young people's current inability to think clearly, to love the lovely, to discern carefully and delay gratification, to remember their shared humanity and not live by mere animal appetites alone, all of this leaves them and the rest of us in society vulnerable, terribly vulnerable, to fake news, coy marketing, political manipulation, bad theology, and unwise living in general. You don't have to look far to see what a collective lack of wisdom and virtue is doing to our country. They lack the logical thinking, the historical context, the civil discourse, evaluative and generative rhetoric, and empathy for others and the ability to listen and speak to a wide variety of audiences, all of which are critical to maintaining our democracy, our freedoms, our humanity, our civilizations, and our souls. But who is teaching the next generation such things? Who? Schools like Cambridge is who? To solve the numerous unknown problems of the future and to protect the best things of our shared past as a creedal nation, one built on an idea or creed, not just an ethnicity or race, we need more than just the right policies and legislation, and more than just the right people in office for a season, and more than just money thrown at issues, though these things are certainly important. What we really need is a critical mass of people in this country who care to pursue wisdom and virtue, who have been wooed to love that which is worth loving and all that is true and good and beautiful, people who are a certain type of person before they ever take on a certain type of job, humane generalists before becoming technical specialists, people who have feasted on the best of all that has been thought and said and done in the past so that they might look squarely at the future and step into their own moment in history, standing on the shoulders of giants. We need adults who understand that only virtuous people can remain free and self-governing for long, and therefore who are interested in cultivating personal virtue, thoughtful citizenship, leadership for the sake of others, and who are motivated to do all this by a thoughtful, intelligent faith that finds it a joy to serve God and neighbor well, because they understand that to whom much is given, much is required. And it was to help educate exactly these kinds of adults that the Cambridge School was founded in 2006. I founded the school because even after my own education at a top-notch prep school in Yale, I felt like something was still missing. And after teaching high school for a decade and working in educational policy, I was searching for something more than an either-or choice in education, either academically rigorous but neglectful of the soul and character, or spiritually nurturing but academically mediocre. I wanted a both-and solution to education, both academically vigorous and spiritually robust, both character and intelligence, faith and learning, excellence and humility, discipline and imagination, and found everything I was looking for in a classical Christian education, a tried and true historical model of education that has given us some of the most brilliant minds and virtuous people in history, from the Apostle Paul to Shakespeare, Calvin to Newton, and the Founding Fathers. And in a time of unprecedented social experimentation in schools, classical Christian education provides a time-tested philosophy and method that teaches kids to think well, love rightly, and live wisely. It does this by using the historic liberal arts of grammar, logic, and rhetoric to help them to learn how to think well, and does that in the context of a very intentional culture, community, curriculum, and pedagogy that is also teaching them to love rightly, meaning learning to love that which is worth loving. And hopefully as a result of those two things, it helps prepare young adults to live wisely in the world. Being duly impressed with the model, but not seeing any classical Christian schools in San Diego at the time, I decided to start my own school. And not just because education was so bad out there, but more because I'd caught a glimpse of how good education could be and should be and would be if we'd recover this proven philosophy and methods. So we began with just 9 kids in kindergarten and first grade 13 years ago, and have added 1 grade per year since then, working with artisanal care to build a thoughtful, robust, carefully scaffolded and integrated curriculum and culture. And at long last, we finally graduated our first class of seniors last June and are looking forward to launching our second class of seniors into the wider world. And I can say sincerely that I like who they are and are becoming in so many different ways, which isn't always easy to say about teenagers. We have grown rapidly year after year to more than 300 students in spite of the Great Recession and in spite of being new and without a reputation. And I believe that's because we have a compelling why that's bigger than college and career readiness, but rather about wisdom and virtue. And we have a tried and true how and what in the historic liberal arts and a rich vision of the who and with whom of education in terms of the very intentional community and culture of students, faculty, and parents. All this translates into providing an elite education without the elitism that often accompanies it, cultivating eulogy virtues instead of resume virtues, as David Brooks would say, and swimming upstream in our culture to produce students of unusual depth and thoughtfulness in this age of trivial pursuits. This is no ordinary school, and as we've executed this mission with excellence through the years, it has yielded some extraordinary results that you just don't often see at most big, well-established schools, let alone small new schools. For example, over the past 3 years, our rookie robotics team has won first place, second place, and now first place again out of hundreds of teams in the super competitive Southern California division, and have been invited to the World Championships for a second time in a row. Imagine the irony of an unknown small liberal arts school winning the biggest robotics competition in the area when surrounded by a sea of big, well-established STEM-focused schools. Speaking to the formative nature of our education, the best part was that the judges told the students that while they knew their science well, what really impressed them was that they were so well-spoken and charming in their presentation. And it was because of these soft skills in combination with their technical skills, who they are in addition to what they know, that they were told that they won by a long shot. This kind of winsome excellence is also true of our performance in debate. All of our logic and rhetoric training finds a natural outlet in debate, and this has allowed our fledgling high school team to rise to the top quickly, with multiple debaters who are ranked in the top 25 and top 100 nationally, and who have qualified for the Super Bowl of high school debate, the Tournament of Champions, multiple years in a row. For a young team from a tiny high school to have accomplished so much at the national level in such little time is unheard of. But rankings and performance aside, the best part of our short history in debate is the feedback that we've gotten from judges, like a Silicon Valley CEO at Stanford, who told our students that they appreciate our mature, gracious, and winsome style of debate, which he thought would serve them well in the boardrooms of life, not just for winning high school debate rounds. Additionally, other teams' coaches have come up to us to tell us how much they appreciate our students' graciousness and kindness, even in the heat of competition, which for us is the real win. And it's funny how we have the unusual distinction of having the most athletic debaters around and the nerdiest basketball team ever, another proud Cambridge both-and badge of honor. And while our students have done very well on things like the SAT with an average of 1450 out of 1600, 400 points above the national average for 2 years in a row now, and while we are thrilled that almost 40% of our first 19 graduating seniors are National Merit Scholars, beyond these flat and Cartesian measures of success, what is most encouraging is what college admissions interviewers, scholarship committees, and internship supervisors have said about our students when they actually interact with them in person. Take, for example, this quote from the executive director of the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation, one of our students who was the recipient of a $300,000 scholarship, one of the largest and most selective 4-year full-ride merit scholarships in the country, awarded to only 3 students in the nation annually. Quote, "Even in front of national leaders, governors and federal judges, business and academic leaders, this student exhibited uncommon intellectual depth and was at ease discussing topics from Latin and ancient literature to the military and entrepreneurships and even sports. Clearly, his classical pedagogical upbringing has had a profound effect on him both academically and personally, instilling in him an unstoppable urge to learn and the grit and the discipline to do so." And this year's senior class continues to impress merit scholarship committees. Adults see the difference in our students immediately, and the results have been full ride or other top merit scholarships being offered after being praised throughout the interview process for their incredible thoughtfulness. Hear what internship supervisors and employers have to say about our students, like this CEO of publicly traded biotech. Quote, he has an impressive combination of professional maturity and presence, aptitude for completing complex tasks, outstanding presentation and communication skills, intellectual curiosity, and the capacity to take on new challenges. He has skills that often take years to develop, which makes it all the more remarkable when they are demonstrated by a high school student. Or this story of a junior interning at a law firm over the summer. After starting with getting coffee and making copies, he was quickly given more and more responsibility for researching because he was so mature and capable, and eventually others in the office began to ask, "What year in law school are you?" only to find out that he was still in high school, much to their surprise. One of our alum is now working at a campus coffee shop on her college campus, and her boss told her that she is the best employee he's ever had, because she's not on her phone during work hours and always asks, "What more can I do? What more can I learn?" And while these may seem like small things, you and I know that these kinds of things become big things in life, and that kind of character in young people is so lacking and therefore so noticeable and encouraging when you do find it. Here's what college interviewers have had to say about our students. Princeton. My typical interviews are 20 to 30 minutes because 17-year-olds usually don't have much to talk about. I'm sorry that we took more than an hour, but I was absolutely fascinated by our conversation. In my 33 years of interviewing for Princeton, I've never met a student like you. Washington University in St. Louis. Your students were amazing. I was told never to use the highest rating after an interview, but I'm giving them that rating anyways because they were that impressive. Cal Berkeley. Best interview ever. Just wanted to keep talking. I wish all 17-year-olds were as mature as you. MIT. Of all my interviews with kids from public and private schools in the San Diego area, the students I was most impressed by were from Cambridge. In fact, I was so impressed with your students and the way they talked about the school that I wanted to send my own kids to the school after meeting them and call the very next day for a tour. It's exactly what I've been looking for my own kids, and she's now a proud parent. Additionally, we had our 6-year accreditation visit just a few weeks ago, and they came in skeptical because our school sounded a little too good to be true. But after 3 full days on campus, meeting with every possible constituency, parents, faculty, board, staff, visiting every single classroom, and listened to what they said as they left. We have no words for what we have just experienced over the past 3 days here. Your students were so polite and engaged. Your community and culture is truly beautiful, and your curriculum and its execution are so thoughtful. We just couldn't believe that a school like this exists. It's so much better than even the report would indicate. You really truly are mission-aligned and mission-driven, and your results are phenomenal. We are leaving refreshed and energized as longtime educators ourselves. You should be so proud of what you've built here. And because of these remarkable results through the years, we have attracted remarkable support for our vision, both from within the school and without, even as a relatively young and new school. For example, we have had incredible support in completing our first ever capital campaign of $4 million this past December, which helped us put a down payment on our current campus a few years ago, renovate to maximize every square inch of the property, and add 6 modular classrooms to accommodate our continued growth. If that weren't exciting enough, we are even more thrilled that a group of philanthropists who have had long-standing interest in education and have no children or grandchildren at Cambridge, but have come to love our distinctive mission and vision, and who know that we are quickly running out of space on our current campus, that they have very generously committed to a very sizable gift to help us purchase land for a new flagship campus for the flagship classical Christian school that we are becoming. We are actively engaged in the search process and hope to have good news to share with the community sooner than later. And finally, this remarkable level of investment and support continues on in the latest exciting news at Cambridge, which is that just a month ago, we announced that a foundation that believes in the transformational work of the Cambridge School has very generously provided a catalytic gift of $1 million to launch an endowment to provide support and stability for the school in perpetuity. This is truly a gift that keeps on giving, and the kind of thing that most small, youngish schools, and even many larger, well-established schools, only dream of. They have also committed to providing an additional $1 million if we can raise the next $3 million for a total initial corpus of $5 million. What an amazing gift for a school of our size and age, and how encouraging to know that so many believe that our school is worthy of such large investments. We are deeply humbled and encouraged by this outpouring of support from people within the parent community and beyond, and for their belief in what we are doing. But back to the students for a moment longer. People continue to ask me how our students are faring in college, coming from such a small and unusual school in so many ways. And here's the answer. They're doing really well, and we are so proud of them, and especially the kind of people they have become, and the stories we're hearing from them that are real-life reflections of how they've learned to think well, love rightly, and live wisely because of their formative time at Cambridge. First, their professors love them as people and as students, and appreciate their wonderful habits of mind, their curiosity, their desire to learn, their ability to ask good questions, the good conversations they have during office hours, their preparation for class, their best efforts instead of the bare minimum. They are doing well, if not performing at the top, even at highly selective schools. They know how to learn, they care to learn, and they have the habits of mind to really learn deeply and maximize their college experience. They are great contributors to class discussion and ready to move the conversation deeper than most students. They are good writers who could make a living editing others' papers. Several have been invited to research for professors as freshmen because they are so mature intellectually and personally. Even in STEM fields like chemistry and calculus, our liberal arts students are knocking it out of the park, breaking curves, really working to understand deeply and make it theirs, seeing connections across disciplines for even deeper thinking. And lastly, something that is so gratifying for us to hear as a school that cares not just about information, but formation, is that while our first alum recognize that they are surrounded by a lot of academically capable kids at their various colleges, they notice that these same students are not nearly as thoughtful about their personal life choices and therefore not always wise in how they do life. While our students are, of course, still young and have much to learn, their education has sought to give them a head start in life by seeking to place old, wise heads on young shoulders. And that is helping them navigate life in these large, secular, often crazy college campuses by thinking well, loving rightly, and living wisely, an attractive mystery to most. Maybe in a different time and place, our students wouldn't stand out so much for their intelligence and character, but for better or worse, in our current context, they really do. They really do stand out, and that's the most encouraging, hopeful part of what we're doing. Wouldn't it be amazing to see hundreds, if not thousands, of students like this launched into the world? This is the power, the formative power, of an intentional educational philosophy put into action. This is the substance and the results people are looking for when they talk about education and education reform. This is the reason why schools like Cambridge need your support to not just survive, but to thrive and replicate themselves 1,000 times over. Because this is truly private education for the public good. Our families, our churches, our communities, workplaces, our country, and our future, they will be better for the kind of young adults we are sending out into the world. Wise and virtuous people who know that the best way to be rich in life is to be rich in love, rich in faith, rich in wisdom, and rich in service, for then you are rich indeed. Thank you.